Thank you very much. So I'm Carol, compulsive overeater from California, the West Coast, and those of you from the East Coast, you're up late. And so that's great. Great. Just thanks for joining us. I love the name of this meeting, Footsteps. You know, I was just taking a walk along the beach, and this was so unusual. Along the path, there was a pelican that was walking, not in the water, but walking on that path, and his beak, he kept turning around, kind of looking at me, you know, and just I was following his footsteps. It was really something. But I love, that's how I do my 11th step and meditate. I walk a lot. So just to get the numbers out of the way, I have been in OA for over 30 years. I have not had perfect abstinence. I've had my slips along the way, but I have never left in that time. I gave away 48 pounds for all, and I've kept those off except for about 8 pounds. I'm older and it's just harder, but I have a food plan and I work it. But I want to just start with one of the things that I thought about for a long time of how I can encapsulate what this program's all about. I call it the Triple A program, Triple A, and the A is for admit, and then acceptance, and then action. Those are the three A's. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the admitting the powerlessness. And I can't think of anything that describes more of my overeating and the things that I did than from the 12th step of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll be using some literature tonight with that. But on page 9, it says, where eating is concerned, we have acted in an extremely irrational, self-destructive manner. Many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We have driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We've eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, dangerously spoiled. We've eaten food off other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We've dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. And we frequently lied about what we've eaten, lied to others. We've stolen food. We have eaten beyond the point of being full. And then, you know, then with all of that, looking for solutions, going to doctors, trying different diets, you know. I do not like that word diet. That's a four-letter word that when I walked into the rooms of OA, I exchanged it. I exchanged it for the hope, the four-letter word of hope. That's where I found the hope. I found people who are my peeps who, you know, are bobbing their heads. We've done the same things, that action of those food behaviors that we did. And the things that I tried never worked, but of course I was going to try them because I had to get that weight off. I did insane things. And one of them that I'm not too proud of, you know, I live in California. We have earthquakes. I was teaching at the time, and we have an earthquake bin where the kids bring snacks and little drinks and things that, in case we have an earthquake and we can't get out or anything, their parents supply that. And there was a time, you know, that things were getting to me, the parents, the grades, things were due, all of that stuff. And I got into the earthquake bin. And once I started, I couldn't stop. That, you know, there was an endless supply. I'm eating kids' snacks. And that is really hard to admit. That's the first A, you know, admit. But I was doing that, and I had gotten into program, had my first sponsor, and I could not believe what she said to me. Well, Carol, just make a list of the things that you've eaten, and you can keep doing that if you want, but you need to replace all those things and go to the store. And you know, it was starting to cost, and there was the embarrassment, and there was the shame, and there was all of, but I had to admit that I had a problem. And that is the bottom line of where we get started. For anybody that's a newcomer, the whole thing there is that I can't stop. I can't manage this on my own, and I had to admit that. And what that really is step one. I am powerless over food, and I make poor decisions when it comes to food. So I have to have some kind of a program. Some of those things that I did besides the thing that I was about the earthquake bin is that sometimes I would get so stoned on white flour and sugar that I can remember one time I was supposed to be taking a trip and I was so stoned at the airport. I missed the flight. I didn't even hear when they were calling the flight. I once was in an accident where the car just rolled down the hill. I was just so out of it. So for me, the food just acts kind of like it says, you know, in the big book, like the alcohol. And it's crazy what it does to me. So that's some of the stories, a little bit of what happens. I identify myself in the very beginning, and all that I've gone through with food is a PIG, a person in gluttony. But today, because of program and working the steps, I consider myself a PIP, a person in progress. Is the progress perfect? No, there's no perfect. But I'm making progress, and I do that by working the steps. That whole thing about being powerless is there has got to be something greater than me because I've tried all kinds of diets. I even got to the point, if I could just lose the weight and get perfect, yeah, perfect, on the scale, I could be a Weight Watcher lecturer. So I did that. I did that, and they had all kinds of promotionals of different kinds of foods and health bars and all kinds of stuff that you could try. And those wrappers that I had in the car, they just switch to Weight Watcher wrappers, And then I had to do some insane exercising to get that weight off so that every week I could go to that scale and go crazy with those numbers so that I could qualify as a Weight Watcher leader. And those things were the insanity of the things that I did. So in this program, I've changed compulsions. I had to be very compulsive about exercise so that I would be the right weight. I was very compulsive about if I wasn't eating, then I just switched to shopping. So those things I had to be very vigilant when I was admitting the things that I was doing. And then the other thing, the second thing about the A was acceptance. Am I willing to accept the help? I can't do this on my own. When I went to my first meeting, I was so stoned with the sugar that the first meeting I went to was at a hospital. And I went in, it started with an E. It was an E. It was the exit. And then I ended up near the entrance for the emergency. I was just totally lost. But I found the way to the rooms, and the thing that kept me going, it was the greeter in the hallway. I was about to turn around because it was also a hospital where they were treating people that were coming down from drugs and alcohol, and there was a lot of screaming and down the halls and things, and I was scared. But when I walked in that meeting over 30 years ago, I found my peeps. And like I said, I haven't left yet, but I had to accept that they had a plan, they had a program. And if I was willing to accept and work those steps, I could have recovery. So, like I said, I turned that diet into hope. I had to, admit and then believe that there was a change that could happen in my life. Where did I get that from? I got that from listening to other people sharing. So for any of you that don't go to a meeting, or, you're kind of now we're back to some in-person meetings. I highly suggest that because it makes a big difference. Feeling those hugs, seeing a person in the meeting that you can hug and relate to, or you hear something in their story that you can relate to. That really has helped my recovery. So first admitting, then the acceptance, and then, part of that acceptance is working the steps. And on step two, it says here in step two, and I'm going to read it out loud, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I have found with all the things that I tried with diets that I could not restore myself to sanity. I only got crazier with the things I was going to try. I remember one time trying it was kind of like a grapefruit diet and all that citrus. I had canker sores all throughout my mouth. There was a time where I asked my husband if he could put a chain lock on the outside refrigerator that was in the garage because I didn't want to get into it. It had some of his, special treats and things that he could handle that I couldn't handle. Well, when he went on business trips, I went to the hardware store and I got one of those things that you chain where you can cut the chain. Nothing's gonna stop this compulsive overeater. And there I was again, binging on stuff that I shouldn't have been into, back to admitting that I had a problem, back to the fact that I needed to work acceptance of working a program, and that restoration was not going to come through Carol. It had to be through a power greater than myself. So the third part of this A, the triple A, is the action, And part of that action is working the steps, reading the literature, going to meetings. But part of the action for me is, let's say I do have a slip. Let's say that I'm beating myself up, and I've done that. And you know what I had to do in this program, and I've come to that in the last 5 years, looking in the mirror and asking my higher power to help me love myself so I won't have those destructive behaviors. The restoration doesn't come from me. It comes from a higher power helping me to love Carol enough to want to stay on a program that's going to restore me to sanity. And that action is the key to do that. And a lot of the times when I would beat myself up, I would find that I wanted to isolate. I didn't want to go to the meetings. I don't want to see anybody. And that made it even worse. Because when you're by yourself, what goes between these two ears is your thought pattern. Really, my disease really is not the food. It's what goes between these ears, my thought life. That's that, like it says in the doctor's opinion, it's a lot of the mind, the phenomenon of the mind. And it's the crazy thinking that I have. So I have to make myself, I have to commit that I will go to a meeting. I have to admit, and I do that with a nightly inventory. If I do something that is dangerous or I'm thinking of that, I want to admit that to my sponsor and we work things out together. So I am not on that road to destruction and I could easily go there. Human resources and everything that I tried don't work. And I wanted to read something from the doctor's opinion because that really has really cemented for me. The whole thing, it says that there is a type who always believe that he will be entirely free from, and I put food, for a period of time. He can take a little extra bite without any danger. This phenomenon, as we suggested, may be manifested of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as distinct entirety. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And it talks about the phenomena of the craving. And when I have that craving, I have to get a hold of someone on the phone. It's like a lifeline, If I'm at that point, I have to pick up the phone. And I need a mental uplift. That comes from having a sponsor. That comes from reading the literature. The other thing is I don't have, quote, willpower on my own. I don't. That's not part of restoration for me. I have to just have willingness, the willingness to pick up the phone, the willingness to admit that I have a problem, that I have a psychological mental deterioration that wants to just do me in. And I get a lot of that through the reading. So the Big Book has meant a lot to me. Bill's story and all of that has really helped me. But, some of those stories in the back, I'm going, wow, that's pretty scary. But you know what? I end up being that way myself too. So, some of the things that I have gone through in this program over that 30-year period is, was working this program and I was on a retreat and I was gone for a weekend and I had entrusted my daughter to some friends that had a daughter her age, and my daughter decided that she wanted to go to the local gas station, get a treat or something, and her friend didn't want to go with her, so she went. And hours and hours went by, and the family called me at the retreat center and said, "We can't find your daughter. She's gone." I found out later my daughter had been kidnapped at 12 years old, and I'm at a retreat. And I called local authorities. We had the police looking. We had detectives at the Canadian border. We had them at the Mexican border, and they're looking for her. That, to me, was the ultimate of surrendering stuff. There was a chapel at this retreat center. I went in that chapel by myself, and I just felt like I have to totally surrender. I laid on the floor of that chapel, and I remember once someone telling that children are a gift from God. And I said, "God, who I choose to call my higher power, you created her, you gave her to me. She's really not me, mine. She belongs to you, so you protect, you keep her safe. But you are large and in charge, and I totally trust you." So that for me was my ultimate surrender. Within 10 days, I heard from the Border Patrol and they had found her. Watch what you pray for. My daughter lives in the Rockies of Colorado. Takes me 2 planes to go see the grandkids. But that was my total time of surrender. The other surrender was on 9/11. My husband and I were in Egypt, and the morning of 9/11, we saw the plane on all of that. I watched people grab drinks, grab food or whatever, and I stayed abstinent through that time, just trusting that God was going to bring us back, and we came back safely. So this program is more than just food. It is a trust walk for me. It is a faith walk. And sometimes when I have an FF, I call it a faith failure, I have to call on my higher power to help me through that because I want to grab onto something that's going to give me comfort, you know? And I kind of wrote this, this little acrostic in my career of being in OA, but the acrostic I put, if I'm in a relapse, I need to reserve a quiet time to get quiet. And to start asking my higher power to help me not to go into that dangerous situation. I need to evaluate, you know, am I into resentment? Am I into self-pity? It talks about all of that on pages 83 through 86 in the big book. But as I evaluate that, I need to look at that. Am I wanting to eat because I'm so angry? I want to get back at somebody. And so I'm just eating out of anger. And then I need to listen to my higher power. That's REL. And then the alone and the quiet. Sometimes I write a two-way prayer. I'm writing to God, and then I'm writing what the answer would be for him. And then the P is to plug into my program, into the steps. And then the S is to slow down. Sometimes I get so overwhelmed and I'm doing things way too fast, or I'm eating too fast. And I need to remember, maybe chew, maybe count to 20 as I'm chewing something. Make sure that I slow down. And then is enjoy the goodness of the program, enjoy my growth, and start concentrating on the progress that I have made instead of beating myself up. That helps me get out of a relapse. I think I've got, do I have a few minutes left, Richard? Got 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. One of the things about a relapse that I learned from somebody, you know, if I'm in a car and I'm going from California to New York and I have a flat tire, I will, you know, fix that flat tire. And then am I going to go back to New York? I mean, back to California, start all over again on my trip and then get to New York. No, I'm going to fix that flat tire and I'm going to go forward. That analogy has really helped me when I've slipped. To realize John Wayne used to have this thing that says, get back in the saddle and go. You know, and I live in a real Western area. We have a lot of places named Seattle, not Seattle, but some of the land that John Wayne owned and Gene Autry and stuff. And so one of the streets is Stagecoach and things like that. And it's just a reminder, get in the saddle and keep going again. Get back to the meeting, get back in the saddle and go. And so in kind of ending here, I just want to remind all of us too, that PIP, to remember that we are people in progress and we may not do it perfect, but it's so important to stay with the herd and keep going in this progress of doing the reading. I highly recommend pages 83 through 86 in the Big Book, and to keep on that road to recovery. So I'm gonna end with that. And I just thank you so much for the opportunity that as we travel this journey together and we walk it together with footsteps, that we do this. And I would like to give all the credit. The hero in my story is my higher power, who I choose to call God, who's helped me so much. Thanks for letting me share.
All right. Okay. Now, let me get the format. Okay. Now is the time to ask our speaker questions. As we are still recording, we ask that you put your questions in the chat and I will read them out loud. You're welcome to message them me direct or to the group. We ask you do not come off mute to ask your questions or thank the speaker verbally in this section, as we don't have permission to record other attendees. We will allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which time we will have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour. Then we open our parking lot. Okay. The first question is, what spiritual advice would you offer someone just beginning their food abstinence?
Okay. Well, the spiritual advice that I would give them is, first of all, and what I've done is get on my knees, because when you're humbled before a power greater than yourself, that puts you in a position physically too, on your knees, if you're able to do that, to humble yourself, to say, I need help and that I cannot do this on my own. An example of that is on this trip to the Middle East, I wanted to be on a camel, and my husband said, okay. So we got this guy, the camel came, and I could not mount the camel until the camel got on his knees. And then the guide goes, and off goes the camel, you know, and you take this rut. And on that trip, we bought a camel, it was made out of wood and was hand carved and everything. And that camel's on his knees, and that is above our bed. And that is always a spiritual reminder to me to humble myself that I can't do this on my own. So I hope that answers your question, but it kind of goes with the admit part.
Okay, here's the next question. How do you know when you're spiritually fit?
How do you know? I thank God for help that I can't figure out something or a decision. When I'm in resentment, when I want to get back at somebody, when I am being selfish, I am not physically fit. When I want to go out and help somebody and do that 12 step, I know that I'm more physically fit. I'm a fit, not spiritually fit. Okay. That's how I kind of use it. It's like a thermometer of my behavior.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Next question. What spiritual advice would you offer to someone just beginning their food abstinence?
Well, first of all, I would ask them to get together with a sponsor that has something that they want. And then I would ask them to get more spiritually, you know, to read the doctor's opinion in the Big Book, so that would help them get on that journey.
Great. Thank you. How did you get to know the Big Book so well on your own with others?
Well, I was just doing the regular steps and the OA sponsor, and then I found a group called OA Big Book Study Group. And they only sponsor through the big book, and it is very thorough. So I worked with a big book sponsor, and that's how I got more familiar with the big book. Also, you can choose different meetings, but I look on the meeting list, and especially at 7 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, 7 o'clock in the morning, we have a big book study on Wednesday morning. And I can put that in the chat for you all if you would like to know more about that. So between being sponsored in the big book through Big Book Study Group, and then through that meetings that I've gone to for Big Book, that's how I've gotten that.
Okay. How did you adopt a meal planning? Did you ever struggle with it?
In all honesty, in the very beginning, I rebelled. What? I gotta call my food in? What? Is this a Nazi program? Da 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 da. That's how I started. Okay. And then somebody that was sponsoring me said, "That's okay. I can return your misery for you." That really got to me. It's like, do you want to follow this meal plan? Do you want to follow a meal plan? Or you want your misery back? And I didn't want my misery back. So, what basically, like we used to have a gray sheet, was three meals with, you could have up to two snacks, and calling that in or writing that in. Sometimes I take pictures of it. Sometimes before I go to a restaurant, I will look up the menu and already decide ahead what I was.
Okay, how do you get back in the wagon quickly if you've jumped off so many times?
I get back by reading the literature, and the bottom line is this is a program of honesty. I just say what I've done and admitted it, asked for help, and I've never felt rejection. I've always felt the hand reaching out to me. That's what the 12 steps all about. And so that's how I get back on it. I think I kind of said a little bit in my talk is that I ask my higher power to help me stock myself up. If I keep beating myself up, I'm not back on that wagon again. I'm not on the road to recovery. I'm not doing footsteps towards recovery. I'm not doing the steps. But if I'm willing to admit and take advice, that's how I get back on the wagon. Because to me, this is the last house on the block. None of those diets worked.
Okay, thank you. Okay, what advice would you give a newcomer with less than 60 days that's struggling with meal planning?
The advice that I would give is stick with a sponsor that you can relate to. Give your food away, but pray before the meal. Chew slowly when you're doing the meal. And also, what I do before I'm going on a trip, I bookend my meetings. I go to a meeting before I go on my trip, and then I go when I get back. And most of the time, I don't have a problem on vacation. I take postcards, and I'm writing out to my sponsor. Sometimes food, sometimes about the trip. Sometimes I'm noticing something emotionally that I'm feeling. Sometimes the happiness of the journey or whatever. But I stay connected. So I would say somebody that's struggling, stay with the herd, stay connected, and don't beat yourself up.
How do you deal with your ego in recovery?
Turning over my ego, ego is edging God out. I put God back in. I can only do that through prayer, turning it over. I don't have the answers. So, one thing about ego, I've done this. I do a lot of walking. I told you that's how I do my 11th step, which is prayer and meditation. But I started the last 2 years of just before I go to sleep, I go outside and I'm looking at the stars. Sometimes I see a shooting star or something, and I'm looking out there and I'm going, I couldn't put that together myself. I couldn't put the universe together myself. And it just puts me in a right relationship that I'm little God's big. And for those of you who have never experienced our redwoods in California, those trees have been around for thousands of years, hundreds of years. And when I walk through the redwoods, I am so small, I feel like a little ant. So that takes ego out too. So.
Okay. I'm working the steps with a sponsor. She suggested I get a food sponsor. What should I expect from a food sponsor?
Well, if you're giving your food, the food sponsor might make a suggestion. You can look for that. And I don't know if you're texting it or calling it in or whatever. But sometimes when I'm giving my food away, she'll put a little thumbs up, okay, like I got it. She'll make a suggestion. It seems like you're restricting. Are you sure you're eating enough here? Then she'll say something about a couple of times she put in there, are you missing your exercise? Little comments you could expect from them.
Question. Okay, I'm going to ask one, which I always ask. What is your morning ritual with program, upon awakening?
First thing I do is I slip out of the bed and I get on my knees and I ask God to guide my day. Then I read from Voices of Recovery, and then the 24-hour, the White Book. Then I do some writing. I do reflections. Then I write a couple of gratitudes, and then I send on a text my food to my sponsor, and then I take my walk. So that's pretty much my routine in the morning.
Thank you. That was
I
great.
want to say something about that routine too.
Sure.
I used this once before. Sometimes I grind my own coffee, okay? And so all that stuff goes down. You put the water in, and then I get the coffee. Now, some of those may not go through all the way, and I call that, I father filter my day. This is what I, and it's like what that means is I also make a list of things the night before of what I'm going to do the next day. And if those things don't happen and I get interruptions, I used to get really upset that my routine was being hijacked or something like that. And now my new serenity through all that is if my day is hijacked, if I get an interruption, if I've been on my knees and I gave my day to God, then He's allowed that interruption and it's totally from His plan, not my plan. And that has really helped me with serenity. Just knowing, and sometimes that interruption could be a phone call, an outreach call. So I get a call, somebody needs a ride from the hospital, something like that. And it turns my day around a little bit. But if I've given my day and my list to God, those things that don't get done, they can get done the next day. But He's ordering my day, my life. Thanks.